Hello everybody and welcome to our webinar a little earlier than usual. I'm not going to go through the slides. Everybody's done this before, so you know the drill. Please keep yourself on self-mute. Raise your hand if you have any questions. Okay? Let's see. As usual, we are going to put this available for download. I put here no slides will be posted, but actually I'm going to post the how-to slides, and I'm also going to post that one little slide that we're adding in there today as a bonus. One of our guest presenters asked us to do something a tad different than we have been doing, and our guest presenters today are Ray and Michael. So any questions we can't answer here in the webinar, we'll follow up on the student union, and of course Brett will post these webinars. I'm not so sure he's posted the last one that we had. He was in the middle of traveling and then moving, so he's a little behind on posting stuff, but they will all eventually get there on Makara. Okay, so Ray, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Okay, so if I start with the Ray's illustration, the Ray illustration, my hypothesis for my own Ray chart is, or has been, the soul is on Ray 2, personality on Ray 4, mental body on Ray 5, astral body on Ray 6, and physical etheric on Ray 7. So this closely ties in with the illustration as shown. The overview of the rays here in the illustration portray a soft line of rays, Rays 2, 4, and 6. And I'd agree that this is pretty much a reasonable depiction. With a fourth ray moon on the personality, a ray 2 Gemini sun, and rays 2 and 6 Piscean moon, I would consider this to be a reasonable assessment. So moving on to the hemisphere splits, the 5-9 count split of the north-south hemisphere shows inward tendencies of subjectiveness, introversion in my own company, which I don't always get enough of. I like to think a lot. I like to walk the dogs through the woods or along the beach when there are a few people around, so I can mull over some of the learning we do in the Moria Federation. Also, this is a good time to recharge my batteries. Although that said, I can do outgoing as per my Piscean moon, high up in the 10th house of being out there, or the position in the outer world. The east-west split of the hemispheres, the 8-6 count, shows a greater emphasis on self-initiating aspects rather than group-initiating. Independence as well. The best example of this was in my working life, where I was either self-employed or employed by a company of my own making. I'm considering starting a study group in the future too. So this is strong for me. I enjoy initiating stuff. As to the quadrant split, these help to pinpoint our focus. Houses 1 to 3, personal identity, self-development. Houses 4 to 6, personal expression, family relations, inner security. And as you see, the count is highest here. This I relate very much to. Houses 7 to 9 deal with social identity and worldly issues. This to me is becoming more of an important interest, and there's a zero count here in this quadrant, but it's an area that I'm developing. And houses 10 to 12 have to do with social expression and public service. With a count of 5 here, this is an important area for me. I contribute to public service as and when I can. So, on to the ascendant now. And Cancer is the rising sign with the moon as exoteric ruler of the chart. That's in the 10th house in Pisces. Neptune is Pisces' exoteric ruler, and it's also the esoteric ruler of the Cancer ascendant. Neptune is also exactly trine the 12th house sun. And they're in mutual reception as well, not by sign, but by house. So, what does all this mean? Well, I had an interest in Buddhism and other Eastern religions very early on in my life, and this eventually led me to discover the Rosicrucian Fellowship of Oceanside, California. I've studied with them on and off for many years via correspondence courses, then internet-based courses on their spiritual astrology, esoteric philosophy, and Bible interpretation, all of which is their interpretation of the ageless wisdom from the Rosicrucian viewpoint. So I've had a lifelong interest in all things mystical and esoteric. And this is my sole purpose, really, and having now retired, I'm able to devote much more time to these ambitions. The rays of Cancer are the third and the seventh, and the exoteric keynote for Cancer, that isolation be the rule, yet the crowd exists. And the esoteric keynote is, I build a lighted house and therein dwell. For me, this is visualized as the Christ spirit within, shining out as a light. Just a dim glow at the moment for me, but I'm working on that. The moon position in the 10th house of ambition, profession, and position in the outer world, and considering the earlier mentioned count shown in the hemisphere analysis, where I have more planets in the eastern side of the chart of initiating my own affairs, this indicates a tendency to go into the world and find my place. For most of my working life, I've been either employed by my own company or been self-employed, as previously said, indicating the self-initiating aspect. Esoteric pointers of the ascendant are as follows. Cancer rising's negative traits are hopefully more or less under control, moodiness, over-emotionalism, suspicion, and tendency to nag. I've learned to recognize them, although my wife says I still do nag, although I'm not sure if that's true or not. The positive traits of Cancer indicate imagination, intuition, loving compassion, protectiveness, and I attempt to use them and work them into my life and do what I can to integrate them. Cancer's rays are the third and the seventh. Soul expression of an ascendant is developed by cultivating the virtues of these rays. And the special virtues of ray three are wide views on all abstract questions, sincerity of purpose, clear intellect, capacity for concentration on philosophic studies, patience, caution, and the special virtues of ray seven, strength, perseverance, courage, courtesy. Virtues to be acquired would be realization of unity, wide-mindedness, tolerance, humility, gentleness, and love. The moon, the ascendant ruler, is on the fourth ray, harmony through conflict. The virtues of this ray include harmony through courageous and intelligent leadership, and harmony by directing them to the path. This is the goal I have for this moment in time. So onto the Sun now at 10 Gemini. This is in the 12th house. So what are the personality traits brought with us from our previous lives? Well, the vices for Gemini are inconsistency, superficiality, indecisiveness, lack of focus, nervousness. These traits, along with the exoteric key phrase for Gemini, let instability do its work, indicate the present problem that needs to be dealt with concerning the personality. We counterbalance these lower personality expressions through the Gemini positive traits to cultivate: versatility and enthusiasm, eloquence and wit and intellect. I recognize some of the negatives, but I'm reasonably comfortable with knowing that the changes have been largely achieved. The house placement of the Sun in the 12th house shows the environment where the work must be done on the personality in order to transform the sign's exoteric key phrase into the higher expression of the soul keynote. Exoterically, the 12th house represents fears and dreams, fantasies, and the crucifixion of the personality. The higher spiritual purpose is to provide an environment for developing the ability to transmute these, together with dispelling fears and illusion. Some crises in my life have led to this occurring, and ultimately allowing the soul to make its presence felt. And there has been a resurrection into service, which is 12th house, where opportunities allow this to happen. So this exoteric unredeemed karmic personality of mine has experienced a karmic redemption, if you like. It has dispelled the fear and illusion that my earlier life experienced. This has the connotation of the moving out from under a dark cloud into the light, or astrologically speaking, from the 12th house, a hidden house, into the first house. This would have occurred when the sun by progression moved across the ascendant when I was in my early 20s. For me, the 12th house is one of the strongest of all the houses, and with this in mind, I feel very comfortable with the most positive of indicators of the 12th and with the sun positioned there. When the sun in Gemini personality has sufficiently raised its vibration enough to be influenced by the soul, it begins the work of developing the esoteric keynote. I see my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. I think that this is where I am developing. The exoteric ruler is Gemini. Of Gemini is Mercury, and Mercury expresses the fourth ray energy. The esoteric ruler is Venus and embodies the fifth ray of concrete knowledge. Both Mercury and Venus are conjunct in my chart, and they straddle the ascendant, showing their affinity for my soul's purpose. Looking at the virtues of Gemini in its ray 2, calm, strength, patience and endurance, love of truth, faithfulness, intuition. And looking at the negative characteristics, overabsorption in study, coldness, indifferent to others. Pretty much gone over these, I think, and the target areas of development for the ray of Gemini: love, compassion, energy, unselfishness. I mentioned that I was considering starting a study group at some time. This would be an example of Ray 2 and Mercury working out, using my studious nature to spread the work by helping to tutor others. So, on to the Moon, which is at 24 Pisces, and it's in the 10th house. The Moon in our chart represents the past. It was the instinctive way we learned to operate when we first began our journey into incarnation. The patterns we've developed over many lifetimes that I now need to overcome include the Pisces negative traits of escapism, idealism, oversensitivity, pessimism, laziness. I need to counterbalance the remnants of any of these negative traits with positive ones. I also need to work on raising the vibration of the exoteric key phrase for Pisces, go forth into matter. Pisces' positive traits to cultivate include imagination, kindness, compassion, intuition, and a sensitive nature. The house placement of the Moon will show the environment where the work must be done on the past patterns of behavior in order to transform the sign's exoteric key phrase into the higher expression of the soul keynote. For me, this is the 10th house that represents career, goals, and the outer world. The higher spiritual purpose is an environment fostering development of spiritual responsibility, preparation for spiritual initiation. I've previously alluded to my career, and this was, I believe, the training ground to overcome the negative traits of the Piscean Moon and to develop its positive virtues. I found that dealing with day-to-day challenges of running a company that constantly threw up difficulties with, for example, meeting deadlines, staff, profitability, and so on, was an ideal training ground for transforming old patterns from the past. Karmic situations were always arising. The Piscean Moon, as the exoteric ruler of the chart, is at the apex of a T-square with Jupiter and Uranus opposing each other on the Gemini-Sagittarius axis. Again, these aspects are exact, and that is, they have a closeness of less than 1 degree and show a tendency of a busy and challenging life in the professional sphere, the 10th house. The company I started in 1987 was dealing in chilled and frozen food distribution, which grew year on year until I retired in 2011. During that time, I built into the company a food manufacturing business that prepared chilled sandwich fillings and salads for distribution to retail outlets, caterers, and other wholesalers. Wholesalers and distributors are ruled by Mercury, that rules exoterically the middleman and which is in Cancer and sits on my ascendant. And the moon rules catering and food, and with the moon in the 10th house, I was able to take this into the wider world as my profession. Pluto is the esoteric ruler of Pisces, represents the destruction of negativity and separateness, and a surrounding of the personality to the soul through Pluto's first ray development of spiritual will. Pluto, or death, never destroys the consciousness aspect. Death in Pisces is transformation. A transformation is vital, that the form which has imprisoned the soul for so long is released, and the person rises from the depths of materialism into the heights of his true spiritual essence. And Pisces is carried on the rays of 2 and 6. So lastly, just to finish off on the moon's nodes, they're on the Taurus Scorpio axis and the 5th and 11th houses. I've always understood that the moon's nodes indicate the path of the soul for this lifetime. It certainly fits with my placements and experience. The south node is in Scorpio in the 5th house, while the north node is in Taurus in the 11th house. The position of the south node is the place of comfort, the point at which you come into the world this lifetime from the standpoint of the soul, the point at which you may retreat into a fail-safe place, a comfortable place. So we can see here how the lower desires of Scorpio made an impact through the 5th house of self-expression. From this point, a translation takes place during the life, and to transcend this negative place and to work towards earthing myself in Taurus, the position of the North Node, I connected with groups and communities, 11th house. I became involved in groups and now take a fuller part of that. Friends and acquaintances, another 11th house, have become a focus of importance in my life, where the background of a belief system is the underlying backcloth that ties us all together. So in my membership of the local church and my activities as a team member, we foster group service for the good of the community. And as I'm the secretary of the church, one day I hope to use my influence as a position to explain more about how the esoteric side of religion, astrology, and the rays can help us understand some of the current difficulties in the world of religion. So that's about it.
Thank you very much, Ray. You did a superb job. I think I just need to basically reiterate a lot of what you pointed out very keenly too, I must add. So in reviewing some of what you said and putting a little emphasis in certain areas, let's look at your ascendant. And so that everyone knows, with Cancer rising, the ruling planets are the moon, as you pointed out, and Neptune. And both of them are strategically placed in your chart, as again you pointed out. So with the moon being the ruler of the chart, we look to see where it is, and it's up in the 10th house, as you said, and it is in Pisces, and it rules, well, it's very, very sensitive, let's put it that way. the moon in Pisces is one of the most sensitive positions one can have. And with Cancer, Cancer is another water sign that is very sensitive. So the fact that you pointed out that you were on the soft line is very true, but we can't ignore the sensitivity. There's a highly sensitive, maybe psychic, maybe sensitive to others as well as to oneself nature that you probably live and take for granted, actually, because this is the only thing you know.
Yeah, now, I think that's probably true, yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing to consider here is that the ruler of this moon in Pisces is Neptune. Neptune is also the ruler of your rising sign. So we see the importance of both the moon and Neptune in your chart. And I would dare say that the moon, because the particular degree of your rising sign would be in the, and I know we haven't studied the decanates, but it is in the Cancer decanate, so it reemphasizes the moon yet again. So no matter how you look at it, you can't get away from this moon and this Neptune, and the highly sensitive qualities, sensitive Buddhic qualities to both these planets that are so important in your chart. Then there's another point here that's worth looking at. Your sun, oh, okay, before I go there, you did point out that that moon of yours does create a very tight T-square with your Jupiter in the sixth house in Sagittarius and your Uranus in Gemini in the 12th house. And they're, you know, within 1 degree of each other, which is a very, very tight T-square, and the emphasis being, of course, at the apex, which is the moon. So again, there is that emphasis as well. So you can see how many times this moon of yours is being re-energized, re-emphasized, and made prominent in your chart, and the fact that it's in the 10th house. It's the highest point in the chart. As a matter of fact, it's very high because the only thing that you really have besides the node there is the 12th house being occupied. There's nothing else on the higher horizon there besides that moon of yours.
Eva? So,
yes.
I just wanted to say, you know, this T-square, I see it as that mystical past that he has, the mystic itself, that is now working through Uranus and Jupiter to develop that intuition and occultism that he's doing innerly because it's in the 12th house, that's Uranus, and opposite Jupiter in Sagittarius, you know, via the ageless wisdom and the expansion of that. So I see this as him moving from that mystic toward the occultist as part of what he's doing to break out of that prison of the soul. So I thought that was very interesting.
Perfect, yes. And to just to go a little further with what you just said, Jupiter in Sagittarius is the consummate teacher. There is the teacher, so you want to open up a study group. So you would have everything going for you.
In his house of service.
That's right. And so, and it's dignified there because it is in its proper sign. Jupiter is the ruler of Sagittarius. And then you bring in Uranus into the picture, and Uranus is the planet of occultism. And it's in an air sign. So it is working within the mind to bring the ageless wisdom, as you said, VL, into a form of service, so he can then, you know, do that. And so that's a very good combination there. Yeah, so we can see how that is playing out in your life. And that sensitivity that you have would really, really help you in the teaching. So that you are understanding with the second ray as well, understanding where someone else is at, being able to meet them where they're at, which is such an important thing for teachers to be able to do. I do want to point out that there is a bit of a dichotomy here. Your moon is in the 10th house, and your son is in the hidden 12th house. So part of you wants to be out there, and then there's the other part that likes to retreat, that needs the time alone, that doesn't really want the light to shine on them. So there is that inner struggle. And do you experience that, Ray?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, there are times when I just want to be quiet, and then there are other times when I just think, I want to go out there, I want to get out there and do stuff.
Right, so that's very built much. In this dichotomy of being out there and yet not wanting, you know, they say that the sun in the 12th house is like having your light under a bushel, right? It's being hidden, and yet you've got all that 12th house energy that is so powerful in your chart. I'm sorry, that the 10th house energy of the moon that is so powerful in your chart, being emphasized in many different ways. So it's just something that, you know.
Eva?
Yeah.
Sorry, I wanted to point out that, you know, you mentioned that hiding the light under the bushel. And I think that other T-square that he has, Pluto in Leo, that is squaring his nodal axis, is there to help him transform that and to bring that light out of the bushel. Of course, we're talking the moon nodes, so it is related to his moon in Pisces, and that, Pluto is the exoteric ruler of Pisces, and it's in his second house of values, but also enlightenment. Of course, as he mentioned, he did very good on the nodes there. The north node, what he's looking for is the enlightenment in Taurus. What he's used to, the south node, is that the Scorpio energy that he needs to raise to that creative self-expression in service work. And so, you know, an interpretation of this is using the light of the soul to overcome desire through right thought, action, and relations. And so that helps him with that transformation aspect of the moon.
Yes, yes, excellent. I wanted to point out also, let me just get my thinking together again. Yes, you have Mars in Virgo. And really, when you look at the chart, it's the only Earth combination that there is. And Mars is not a particularly grounding planet. It's a very active planet. It's always on the go. It pushes, it motivates, and so on. I'm going to ask you, Ray, how do you ground yourself? How do you keep yourself from having to go either too much internally or... Anyway, how do you ground yourself is the question I would ask.
I'm not absolutely sure. I suppose it's through the Piscean moon, really, but that's, you know, taken me out into the, you know, the greater world or in the past through my career. But also, I think, by way of traveling and seeing places and, you know, you're out in, you know, you're not out, you're not within yourself, you're going out into the big wide world, really, and that, I think that's probably the only way I do it.
You hinted at something before as well. Actually, you didn't hint, you outwardly said that you need to go for your walks, you need your retreat. That is a very important thing for you to do because it allows you to consolidate yourself, and you feel much better when you do that. Because your Jupiter and your Sun are in the 6th and 12th house axis, and if you don't do that to yourself, if you don't give yourself that alone time, that time to rejuvenate yourself, however you want to articulate that in your head, you might suffer. You know, health-wise, you might either feel depleted or you don't feel, you know, that grounded or that stable is what I would say.
Yeah. I have to say that if we are in a company of a lot of people for any length of time, I certainly need to get out on my own and perhaps walk the dogs or stuff like that.
Right.
To recharge my batteries. Yeah, I see that.
Because of all the water, you see, the water absorbs. And with Pisces, there are no boundaries. It's like being in the ocean or in a fishbowl. How do you differentiate what is yours and what is somebody else's energy? And when you're in a crowd or you go to a mall or you go to a baseball or football game, there is so much energy all around, and it's too easy for you with all that water to absorb it. And therefore, that's why I ask, how do you ground yourself? Because you're going to be absorbing all this energy, but maybe you've learned ways of deflecting it. But for the most part, with that energy system, it's too easy for you to absorb. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I've been able to, I've learned how to put up barriers. You know, when I was working, you know, there was so much stuff coming in, you know, information coming in at points that you just have to relax, get away from it, and recharge, and then if it's important stuff, then you go back to it later.
Right.
But yeah, you take periods of rest. Yeah.
Right. That's a very important thing for you, and I really would advise you to continue doing that for your health. For your health.
Yeah.
Now, there's a very important thing that DK says that for the most part we don't talk about, and that is that the moon, the ruler of Cancer, is a fourth ray energy. It distributes the fourth ray. And what it does then is it creates struggle in the life. And that struggle is a very important part of our growth. So that eventually, in Cancer, you perfect the instrument that you are, the personality or the being that you are, so that it becomes an instrument for service. And then you can serve the mass instead of being involved and lost in the mass, which Cancer represents. And you spoke a lot about service. So it's through struggle, and the struggle being the fourth ray of the moon. And then I look at your Saturn, and then your Saturn is right next to Pluto, which in itself, that combination is a struggle. It's not the easiest combination to live with. We talked a lot about that with Vera, because she had the same combo. You know, one has to do with authority, as we know, and the other one has to do with restrictions and, you know, that kind of thing. So wanting to be on your own fits perfectly with that combination. But that struggle that you lived, whether your earlier years or your midlife years, has led to you wanting to serve in a great capacity. And Jupiter sitting in the sixth house of service is is a wonderful place for you to be able to do that, whether it's through teaching, whether it's through enlightening other people through your nodal axis and your node in North Node in Taurus, to enlighten and to bring wisdom to other people. So anyway, it's an interesting thing to think of the moon in Cancer as struggle.
Okay. Thanks for that.
Okay. Thank you.
And I just wanted to say to wrap this up, thank you, Ray. It was very, very good. But I want to reemphasize, I think you touched on a little bit of this, but, you know, as someone seeking esoteric knowledge, we would expect to see relationships between the moon in the ascendant and the sun in the ascendant, and we certainly do here, with the moon being the ruler of the Cancer ascendant, and the same thing we see with the sun, with both its rulers, Mercury and Venus, being in Cancer. So there is that relationship. In some cases, as we've seen, it's going to be challenging for you, but there is that relationship that shows that the potential is there for the soul to be working with both of these lower vehicles, the moon and the personality. And one of the things that Eva usually mentions that I don't want to leave without saying is that your Chiron in Scorpio, Chiron meaning the place of adjustment among many other things, This reinforces what I said earlier about the T-square and the enlightenment and the use of the light of the soul to overcome desire and right thought, action, and relationships. That just reiterates that same thing for you there and has that touch of Jupiter in it, you know, the ageless wisdom, the teacher, as part of your creative expression. So it's just more ways of saying the same thing within a chart. And in my experience, the more times the chart says it, the more you have to pay attention. So
exactly. Yeah. Thank you. That was really well done.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Okay, let's move on here. And here's for our deviation. Our next presenter had a little dilemma. He says, BL, how many ways can I talk about having all three of my biggies in Gemini? How about if you let me talk about the decanence? And what we mean when we talk about decanence are the 30 degrees of the sign, like Aries here, is split up into three sections called decanence. Now, the decanate itself is usually based on the ruler, but that ruler has to do with the signs. They're based on the elements. So all the fire signs are going to have fire-related decanates. All the air signs are going to have air-related decanates. And and then you look at the ruler. These here are the traditional rulers that are associated with them, as you can see from my little table here. The Aries is going to be Aries will be the first one. So Mars is the traditional ruler for that. So it's the Mars decanate. The second fire sign is Leo. The traditional ruler for that is the Sun. So Sun is the decanate ruler for Aries. And the third decanate, Sagittarius, is the next fire sign. Jupiter is the next one. Now, I would like to see a show of hands. How many of you have read either your Sun sign or your Ascendant sign in esoteric astrology? None of you have? Oh, a couple. Okay, not all of you. At the very back of each particular sign, DK talks about the decanence. And this is what he means when he talks about them. Okay? So, let's let Michael present his chart to you and talk about the decanence.
Just before he goes on, just to a little bit more on that is that the first decanate is from 0 to 10 degrees. The second decanate is anything from 10 to 20 degrees, while the third one is from 20 to 30. And so that's how it's broken up. So you know, if you have, for example, your Sun at 12 degrees of Aries, it would be at the second decanate because it's more than 10 and it's less than 20, right? So that's how we kind of play with that. It's a numbers game. Okay, done.
Michael?
I guess you're ready now. Okay. In looking at my chart, I am actually including the 10 planets, Earth, Vulcan, Chiron, and the North and South nodes in analyzing the hemispheres and the quadrants. But with the elements and modes, I'm also including the four angles, or what's called the calculated points, being the ascendant, descendant, MC, and IC. And because these are not only planets, but they're also calculated points, I'm using the term objects instead of planets. Starting first with the hemispheres, I've got four objects in the southern hemisphere and 11 objects in the northern hemisphere. The preponderance of objects in the northern hemisphere tends to show that of an introverted nature, which is how I have always thought of myself and how I have typically operated in the outer world. There are 8 objects in the eastern hemisphere and 7 in the western hemisphere. This shows a relative balance between self-initiated and group-initiated activities. I have found that I work well both individually and in groups, although I have a general preference for individual work, as shown with the Eastern weight. In my personality work as an architect, I have worked as an employee in small architectural firms, medium-sized architectural firms, large corporate environments, and with a partner responsible for up to 12 employees. For the last 11 years, I have operated my own business through which I work alone at home. For the last 8 years, I have participated and occasionally led a weekly prayer energy healing group. Moving on to the quadrants. The first quadrant shows a life primarily focused in personal identity and self-development. The second is more about personal expression, family relations, and inner security. The third regards social identity and worldly issues, and the fourth focuses on social expression and a contribution to public service. With 8 of the objects in the first quadrant, this preponderance indicates a quest for finding my true self and development of that self. The second quadrant has 3 objects, the third has 4 objects, and the fourth has none. This life has been one of searching and trying to find who I really am. For most of my life, I have wrestled greatly with a deep sense of not fitting in within the outer world. As a first grader, my teacher caught me watching plants grow. Until relatively recently, the closest I had come in that search was in my teen years in studying the secret doctrine and reading the books and materials of the I Am movement. Moving on to the elements. There are 4 objects in fire signs, 3 in earth signs, 6 in air signs, and 6 in water signs. This shows a greater emphasis in both air and water signs, with a greater emphasis in air due to the ascendant, sun, moon, and MC all in air. Air signs are typically focused mentally. Water has a significant relationship to emotions and the astral plane. The air signs are masculine. The yang energies are active and self-expressive. The water signs are feminine. The yin energies are passive and receptive. Each of the elements can be seen with positive and or negative qualities. Some of the qualities shown through the emphasis of objects in water signs indicate that I may be sensitive and intuitive, may exhibit an empathic response to others, may display great sensitivity, or instead of intuitiveness, may sense the issues of others through gut feelings, or have a solar plexus focus. I find that I do have a degree of sensitivity and empathic connection with others, but I have been working to rise above the fogs of the astral plane. Although I see my intuition as beginning to develop, I also see my focus as being more in the mind than in the solar plexus. Some of the characteristics of the objects in air signs include focusing energy on ideas which have not yet materialized, having an ability to detach, thereby providing perspective and objectivity, having a need for distance in order to find oneself, sociability, or one may be flighty or an impractical dreamer and can overvalue one's intellectual abilities. I do spend much time in thought and have a very active mind. I have never considered myself a social person, not being interested in the usual small talk, and preferring quiet. Although I do not consider myself flighty, I do tend to be a dreamer towards ideals. In terms of mental focus, while in college, I spent time working for a panel home manufacturer. One of the shop employees told me that he never thought on the job because when he thought, he would get into trouble. This left me very perplexed. Turning to the modes, there are 9 objects in cardinal signs, 4 in fixed signs, and 6 objects in mutable signs. With a preponderance of objects in cardinal signs, this shows a tendency for independence, seeking control over my environment, drive and ambition, and a tendency to start things but with a potential lack of follow-through. As somewhat of an overachiever, my wife laughs at that, and self-starter, I recognize the ambition and desire for independence. But I also have difficulty in completing some types of projects as my interest moves to the next project. With a secondary emphasis in mutable signs, I resonate to being flexible, adaptable, and keeping busy. And again, my wife laughs. My ascendant-descendant axis is in mutable signs, Gemini-Sagittarius, relating to resolving the duality of the personality-soul in Gemini, by aspiring to the spiritual life through setting new and higher goals in Sagittarius. My ICMC axis is in fixed signs, Leo Aquarius, relating to the self-empowered leader in Leo, which may have been achieved in prior lives, providing the ashramic roots and tools for using the scientific mind to aid world need in Aquarius, as my ashramic work in this embodiment. I have a couple stellia, and these indicate energies from past lives on which the soul has chosen to focus in this life for learning and growth. There are two, with the first in Gemini consisting of the ascendant, the sun, Vulcan, and the moon. This shows an emphasis on learning to receive and use the Gemini second ray energy, as it is modified by the second ray sun, first ray Vulcan, and fourth ray moon, all in the first house of soul purpose. There is an even greater emphasis on the third and seventh ray energies in Cancer with ray 2 Jupiter, ray 4 Mercury, ray 5 Venus, the south node, and ray 7 Uranus, creating a stellium, with the first three planets in the south node having a second house emphasis on spiritual resources and values. Regarding my ray chart, I hypothesize that my rheological makeup is second ray soul, seventh ray personality, fifth ray mental, second ray emotional, and seventh ray physical. I arrived at this hypothesis from study and a workshop on the seven qualities of divinity, which I prepared and presented in 2013. I also think that I have a legacy ray six from a previous embodiment as a Buddhist monk. As a baby and young child, I had the appearance of an Oriental, and my mother and maternal grandmother called me their little Chinaman. The two stellia are emphasizing the second and seventh ray energies in my rheological makeup. Moving on to the ascendant, finally, it represents the intended life or the immediate soul purpose for this incarnation or the possibilities of the life, the spiritual goal for this and future embodiments. In this chart, the ascendant is located in Gemini 158 in the first or Gemini decanate, which again emphasizes the second ray qualities. With the possibilities in this life to detach from the lower self and find identification with the love and beauty of the soul. In Gemini, the mantra of the soul is, I see my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. My high goal for this life seems to become a clear channel for divine love and wisdom, thereby communicating the ageless wisdom to the masses and attract many to the path of return. 4 years ago, in seeming response to the energies of my upcoming Saturn return, I returned to the study of the ancient wisdom and to find myself. 2 years ago, at age 58, I began to present workshops on what I have been studying and learning. This is what I believe my soul work to be. Now the sun sign is located in Gemini 1119 in the second or Libra decanate, which colors the second ray sign with ray 3 qualities. The sun represents the problem of the life or the probabilities. The sun itself is a representation of the personality or one's identity. In this chart, the sun is located in the first house, which is that of one's physical body, the approach to life, and personal interest from a traditional standpoint. Even though not stationed in this house, it is governed by Aries, which seeks control of the personality through learning to control the mind, with the goal of using will and power intelligently for the betterment of humanity. From an esoteric perspective, the first house relates to the emergence of the soul, control of the physical body, and expression of soul purpose. In Gemini, the mantra of the personality is, "Let instability do its work." The Sun in Gemini is a call to release the hold of the lower self and identify with the love and beauty of the soul. This is achieved by holding the mind steady in the light so that soul illumination may occur. The goal is to use the light of the higher mental powers to inform and inspire others to reach for their higher goals. When I was 12 years old, I experienced an internal debate about the direction I should take for my life. I had to decide whether I would become an architect or a philosopher. At that time, the choice I made was fitting for my 7th-ray personality. So I studied and worked to become an architect. This has provided a generally satisfying outer life. Now the personality light is waning with instability diminishing. When I was 13 or 14, I had some health issues for which I went to a holistic health center. The director of that center read me and informed me that my work was to be a minister. I thought that this could surely not be the case in the orthodox sense. This idea has remained with me ever since, and is part of the inspiration in the studying and teaching of this philosophy. I see the soul light is waxing, and I am growing stronger as a result. Turning now to the Moon, which is located at Gemini 2806 in the third or Aquarius decanate, which colors the second ray sign with ray 5 qualities. The Moon represents that which is past, the limitations and present handicaps. It governs the physical body and shows where the prison of the soul is to be found. It is this which is to be transformed. In this chart, the Moon is located in the first house, which, from a traditional standpoint, is related to one's image and personal interest. The lower self or personality dominating the Gemini life can be exhibited as shallowness in approach, a lack of empathy for others, of playing mental or emotional games, and of being deceitful. I do not believe I resonate with any of these typical characteristics. In college, I was told by one person that they did not like me because I was too intense. Because the Moon is located on the cusp of Gemini Cancer and the first second house, there can also be resultant secondary influences. The influences of Cancer on the Moon can show as a fear of rejection, a distortion of truth and reality, and becoming super defensive. The lower nature of the second house relates to personal resources, possessions, and things, or nouns as a friend calls them, and the desire nature wanting to hold on to those things. In this life, I have experienced much rejection in both personal and business relationships. In those relationships, I also had to deal with the dishonesty of others. In spite of this, I am still generally very trusting of others. I also continue to struggle with letting go of material things of which I no longer need, in spite of the obviousness of the situation. How do all three of those work in unison? I see my approach to the world, or my immediate reaction to problems confronting me, may be colored by the energy from Gemini through my Sun sign. Gemini is traditionally associated with the love of learning and acquiring knowledge, which can then be used to better understand people, life in general, and the universe. My goal is to overcome desire or glamour and illusion, transform the duality of the lower and higher selves, and serve as a soul in incarnation. The constellation Gemini is a transmitter of the qualities of divinity called second ray, love wisdom, related to the will to unite and illumine. From a personality standpoint, these energies can display as chattering or thinking without discrimination. from a soul standpoint, the energies can be shown as a wise and inclusive messenger of the gods. I see the strengths of this ray, which I have developed, as calmness, patience, a love of truth, conscientiousness, and consideration for others. Weaknesses which I am working on include sometimes being too sensitive and needing approval. The major glamours which I currently see to be overcome include selfish responsibility and self-sacrifice. And how much more time do I have?
Oh, you're doing fine.
I can do some more? Okay. Rulers of Gemini. The rulers of my chart are Mercury exoterically and Venus esoterically. Mercury is a non-sacred planet expressing the fourth ray of harmony through conflict. It's the traditional ruler of Gemini and the esoteric ruler of the first house, and it's found in Cancer 352. Mercury represents mind wisdom, or on various levels, the concrete mind, the antahkarana, or bridge connecting the minds, the abstract mind, and the intuition. There is also a tie-in between Mercury and the ascendant, as the Gemini-Gemini decanate is also considered to be the Mercury-Mercury decanate. And there is a semi-sextal friendly relationship. The fourth ray energy of Mercury is united with that of second ray Jupiter, showing the potential for uniting the concrete mind and intuition with the potential for expanding divine love through developing that intuition. The conjunction with ray 4 moon indicates a strengthening of the concrete mind as a limitation and handicap to overcome. The conjunction with ray 5 Venus provides an opportunity for developing the intelligent love through use of the developing intuition. By the opposition between ray 4 Mercury and ray 6 Mars, there is a need to balance the concrete mind with the emotional nature. With the trine between ray 4 Mercury and ray 3 Saturn indicating a path of least resistance or ease of use, I have the potential benefit to use those energies to their fullest through Saturn's test of karma working through the Mercury concrete mind. The esoteric ruler is Venus, a sacred planet expressing the fifth ray concrete science and knowledge. It is also in Cancer at 1144. Venus represents love wisdom with the goal to love intelligently. A favorite expression of mine is to think with the heart and love with the mind. Being in the second house, of which it is also the exoteric ruler, this intelligent love can be developed through the right use of spiritual energy, control of the desire nature, and right detachment from form life. The energy of Venus is united with that of the South Node and Mercury by their conjunctions. By the oppositions between Ray 5 Venus and the North Node and Ray 6 Mars, I must learn to balance the energies of these. The semi-sextal connection between Ray 5 Venus and Ray 2 Sun is reinforced with the Sun in the Gemini-Libra decanate, which is also considered the Mercury-Venus decanate. With the two planets of the mind in Cancer, a major goal for me is to develop the intellect, which I can then use to control the emotional body, thereby achieving release from glamours and illusions. How's that?
That's excellent. Thank you. I'm glad you covered those two rulers because they're important. They rule all your three luminaries. So that was a very important piece that you had to add to that. Let me start out by saying, Michael, you've done a super job. Both our presenters today are very well versed in astrology, we can tell, and seem to know how to present this very well. So kudos to both of you. Now, for you, Michael, we have to see the fact that the soul very intentionally chose for you to have all your three biggies in Gemini. That was very, very intentional. We can't overlook that. So that's the first thing that all of us looking at this and seeing this have to realize. Now, if we look at the moon also represents what we've come in with, what we've learned in the past. You're almost at the end. It's a 28 degrees. It's not a 29, which is the most critical of all the degrees, but you're pretty close there. And yet the soul felt, you know, you didn't learn yet everything about Gemini. You're gonna need to learn a little bit more. So the sun is now in Gemini as well as the ascendant at 1 degree. Usually when we see an ascendant at 1 degree, we think, oh, this is might be a new energetic coming into the life, but that's not the case here for you. So how do we look at all of this? Again, it's a very intentional, purposeful condition that you are born with. The fact that it's they're all three are in air is very, very telling, and all three of them represent a different sign, as you have mentioned, through the decanates. For example, your ascendant is in 1 degree, so it's in Gemini decanate of Gemini, and therefore Mercury is very strong there. The second thing is the sun at 11 degrees, so it takes us into the Libra decanate of Gemini with Venus being emphasized. So what we would do is we would look to see where your Venus is, and your Venus is in Cancer and in the second house, which you've already talked about. And then we look at your moon, and your moon is between 20 and 30, like we said, so it's in the third decanate of Gemini, which takes us into Aquarius, and Uranus is then emphasized. So for those that are observing this for the first time, do you see how we're playing around with the decanates here? And all three air signs are emphasized for you, which gives you, in a way, a trine, if you know what I mean, because all three are being emphasized. It's a lot of air. And yet, the two planets that rule Gemini, both your Mercury and your Venus, are not in air. They are in water, which is, again, telling us something very specific, that had they been in the air as well, had they been in any of the air signs, we would say that it's that you pretty well got a good handle on your emotions. But here, as you said, you need to really hone in and find a way to use the mind to really work on the form and the being being under, I don't want to use the word control, because there's a certain measure of control you already have just by the fact that you have all this air, but to use it and to refine it even more. So the important thing for us to always remember with Gemini is that it's the interplay. It's the interplay of relationship between the form. And, of course, the form takes in all three vehicles. The moon represents our physical form. The Mercury represents our mind. And, of course, the moon can also represent our emotions, as can Venus. And the fact that a lot of it is emphasized in a water sign together with Jupiter, making it even more so. So all of these are the form. So the interplay with Gemini is always about the relationship between the form life and the soul or spirit life. So we know, even by the keynote, the mantra, that there is always the waning of the one and the waxing of the other. So this is a life where you need to constantly see what is that interplay doing for you. Now, you did talk about that. You talked about having to make decisions. Do I want to do this or do I want to do that, which requires choice, which is of the mind. Do I want to expand my form life, which is whether it be the architect or working with matter, seventh ray form, or do I want to do something of a higher mind thing, which you say later on in life it has led you to want to do that, and you have immersed yourself into studying, even though you study the secret doctrine at a very, very young age. So there was always this interplay, between the spirit, the soul, the higher stuff versus the form life. And we all need to expand our form life. We have to get pretty good on the physical plane. So it's not by accident that we do this. It's a very necessary thing. So anyway, this is what I see in this combination, is the interplay between the two, between soul and personality, basically, is what I'm saying. With Gemini, there's an oscillation. And it is when these energies merge in Libra that we can say that maybe we can walk that middle path or that middle line or that energy between the two in a very stable way. See, there's instability with Gemini. Therefore, there's this interplay. Therefore, there's this oscillation. Okay? And you need to, what you've got going for you so well here is the one planet that you have in Earth, which is exalted, as Michael keeps reminding us all the time, which is Mars. Mars is exalted. I'm sorry, I'm looking at Mars, Abiel. That's right. Mars is exalted in Capricorn. So you can take all that energy and bring it up to the heights of Capricorn, which will bring about such wonderful transformation in your life. It is in the house of transformation. And you've got your ruler of that Capricorn, which is Saturn, in the sign of transformation, in Scorpio, in the house of service. So it's not by accident then that you have this exalted planet in the sign of Capricorn, and the ruler, and yes, it's in the it's in the Saturn decanate, which is the Capricorn decanate of Capricorn. So it's re-emphasized again. Okay, you see how we're doing that? So it's re-emphasizing the Saturn, and the Saturn is in the sign, the eighth sign, which is the sign of transformation, of growth, of you know, redeeming yourself. So I think that's really, really cool. The other thing that is worth considering here is that your Chiron, also in Capricorn, is in the ninth house, the house of higher learning. So adjustments have had to be made all your life with respect to this higher learning, whether it's the early life of studying a spirituality or occultism, and continually even now. So there's this continual adjustment, correction of the higher learning, the philosophy, and all that kind of stuff. What else is there to say here? I think we pretty well covered the fact that Uranus is in the third house of learning. And Uranus is an occult planet, right? So again, it does form a wide opposition to Chiron, but it's still the 3 and the 9 axis that I'm looking at here.
Eva?
Yes.
I was also looking at the retrogrades for Mars and Chiron.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, Chiron is usually retrograde. It retrograde an awful lot of times, and the nodes are almost always retrograde. But the fact that Mars is retrograde, that's a very cool thing. And can you speak to that? What did you come away with as a result of that?
For Mars, I'm looking at my notes.
I will say that it's the only planet in an Earth sign, and like we asked Ray, I will ask you the same thing. How do you ground yourself? See, Mars is not a very grounding planet.
I like my time alone.
Well, there you go. Okay.
But he also has that huge stellium in his second house, which is a Earth house,
and
the same with the 6. He's got a couple of solid things there in the 6, which is an Earth house. So he's got some of that Earth quality there that is non-traditionally apparent right now.
Right. And the fact that I'm going to let you talk, but the fact that it's retrograde what does it do to the energy? Do we, can we understand that retrograde makes it opposite to what it normally would be looked at? Oh, I'm not saying that very well, I'm sorry. But
what I wrote down was it may indicate a time for reflection or internalizing the Ray-6 energy. And then I said that the exaltation indicates a place of power.
Yes, yes. And that ambition and that rising to the top, you see, that's what that Mars in Capricorn being so exalted is. Capricorn by its very nature is all about reaching and succeeding and being ambitious. With Mars there, it tends to give us so much drive and energy and potency to arrive there. Now, with Mars being retrograde, it's almost as if brakes are on, you know. It's not quite as active, it's not quite as driven as it normally would be. And that too would make it more solid and not as active, if I can use that word active to represent Mars here. And so that would stabilize it, you see. That would stabilize you as well, in much more so than if it wasn't retrograde.
And then the cardinal T-square?
Yes.
Uranus, occultism, with Chiron,
yeah,
the teacher or sage in Capricorn,
yeah,
and both challenged by the squares to retrograde Neptune.
Right. And you know what? Those outer planets are half the year they're retrograde and half the year they're direct. So it's something I don't consider,
okay,
really. Because they're half the year. Yeah, so you've got the T-square there, Neptune being highlighted because it's the apex. So what would you say about your Neptune as being the apex here and the emphasis being on it?
I didn't write anything about Neptune.
Okay, so don't look at your notes, but knowing what you know about Neptune, what would you say? Isn't that about idealism? Isn't that about the mystic?
Mystical consciousness, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's an emphasis on that.
Yeah, there is. I'd like to point something out for you. You've got this huge stellium in Cancer that's opposite a fairly decent showing in Capricorn. So that, to me, and it's the Mars, the direction, maybe internalized because of the retrograde, but also the north node, which means that's another karmic placement for you in a karmic house. The eighth house is a karmic house. To work, I would say to shift from all of this water cancer to the Capricorn focus, but this stellium shows that you do that through the masses somehow. So, you know, you're wanting to teach and reach the masses through this function. And Neptune in Libra is going to help you do that, because what is Neptune in Libra? It's the esoteric ruler of all of this cancer, isn't it?
Sorry about this ringing. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd also like to point out, before we wrap this up, that, you know, Eva talked about the ascendant and the moon. I see them as bookends. The moon being the form at one of the later degrees, meaning you're getting ready to wrap up this particular spiral for the form, but that you're just beginning this spiral for the soul. And the moon here in the middle is the mediator between the two, the personality mediating between the form and the soul. So, you know, this just reinforces all of the things that you have said and that you previously pointed out.
One more point, and then I'm finished, and that is Saturn is retrograde, and that's worth looking at as a retrograde. Saturn, when it's retrograde, can really speak to being a loner, to being misunderstood. To being misunderstood and being a loner, and the fact that it's in Scorpio, there's an intensity there.
Mm-hmm. I do like my time alone.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that may be a holdover from a previous embodiment as a Buddhist monk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's well done. I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yes, very, very nice, Michael. Okay, we've got a few minutes left, so I'm going to try and go through this really quickly, but I thought that it would be a good idea for our third presenter for me to show you the information on Al and Leo. When DK does talk about the decanates, he mentions two astrologers. He mentions Sapphiriel, and he mentions Al and Leo. And he tells us what each of them assigned to the decanates, and he almost always, there were one or two exceptions, but he almost always says that Al and Leo was the most esoteric of them. So let me tell you a little bit about Al and Leo. Michael thought he had a stellium in Gemini. We'll look at this one in Leo here. Al and Leo is actually the pseudonym of William Frederick Allen. He was born in August 1860 in Westminster, London. He's a prominent British astrologer, and he was a theosophist. Let me see. Contemporary was Sapphiriel, and I may be saying that wrong, who was the pseudonym for Dr. Walter Old. And both of them were astrologers at the same time. Okay, Leo is actually considered the father of modern astrology, and the series of astrological books is still actually in publication and widely used today. I've got his little library, excellent set of books. He was actually pivotal in turning astrology of the time from being that event-oriented, fatalistic kind of astrology and making it more analytical and psychological instead, introducing karma and past lives into the astrological mix. This particular chart that we're using for him is one that he cast for himself. He picked this ascendant at 27 Leo. His parents gave him an approximate time for his birth. Notice that it is conjunct his Saturn. However, he put Saturn in the 12th house. A karmic placement in a most karmic house. As we can see from his chart, this is the third, the Aries or Mars decanate of Leo for his particular ascendant. Also notice that huge stellium that he's got in Leo, pretty much most of it there in his 12th house, although it actually spans his 11th, 12th, and 1st house, including the ascendant there. So, just as Eva said about Michael and Gemini, Al and Leo really wanted to work with this Leo energy this time around. He also has a stellium in Aquarius, the opposite sign. He has Cancer, Capricorn, intercepted, which means they're contained entirely within the 11th and 5th houses, so they don't show up on any particular cusp. We haven't really got into interceptions yet. We are going to get into them in the January 2015 webinar. We'll go into them more. But I just wanted to make note of this because what this does for him, anytime you have an interception, it means you have two signs that appear on two house cusps, doubling the influence of that. And what are his two signs that appear on two cusps? Leo and Aquarius. Leo in the 5th and Aquarius in the 11th, Leo in the 1st, yeah, wait a minute, yeah, yeah, he's got Leo on the, on the 12th and 1st, and he's got Aquarius on the 6th and 7th cusps there. So, double shot of this already way over-influenced axis in his chart, right? Quickly looking at his hemisphere, we see more emphasis on the southern hemisphere. Like all the rest of us, he needs his alone time. The other way around, southern the top. Extroverted tendencies, he needed the contact with others. Okay? It's reinforced by that Aquarius in service, relatability, both the 6th and 7th cusps So he was a very people person. That big grouping in the fourth quadrant we've got for him right here, you know, these are fairly balanced, east and west, top heavy, and that fourth quarter, of course. Two-thirds of his signs are the yang or male signs, more indications of the outgoing expressive energy that's typical of the male signs. What are the male signs? They're the odd number signs, Aries, Gemini, Leo, Libra, Sagittarius, Aquarius. So he's got this strong emphasis on the 1-3-5-7 ray line within his chart. Okay, so we
very little soft rays there, you know, maybe Neptune and Pisces, but everything else, like you say, is really strong.
Yeah, yeah, very, very strong on ray 1 and 5, but ray 5 edges out. Why? Because ray 5 is predominantly, is the only ray that goes through Aquarius. So the Leo is both 1 and 5. And what is ray 5? Ray 5 is that concrete knowledge, I would say, in his case. There's no indication of a scientist, but there is of a of that concrete knowledge that he was working with. Also, the Ray 3 in astrology. His south node, or his karmic influence, and, of course, the baggage that he brings with him into this incarnation is in Leo. So he's been working on this for a while. And what we see is his nodes. You know, that south node is the only thing there in the 11th house. Whoops. Got to remember what computer I'm on. The only Leo planet he has in the 11th house. And this is a Leo sign in the Aquarius house. While we've got the opposite with the north node, what he is supposed to work on is the Aquarian energy in his Leo house. So this is his creative, his creative expression needs to move toward the Aquarian energy, the give that to the people energy, as opposed to the self-development of the Leo sign there. Let me see. We see Chiron at 25 Aquarius opposing his Saturn in Ascendant. So again, this is another karmic opportunity of adjustment to bump up his service-related energy from the personality levels to the service-related. Okay, we're talking universal concepts of wisdom, Chiron in Aquarius, and making them personal, the Leo, but for other people. Well, let's look at the other planets that he has. We talked a little about the south node. Jupiter, wisdom, also generosity and expansion. He was active in the Theosophical Society, which is a good representation of Jupiter. This is the sacred Ray 2 planet, and it's conjunct his sun, the non-sacred Ray 2 planet. I'm guessing on his Ray structure, but I'm going to hypothesize a Ray 2 soul for him with maybe a Ray 5 mind that's leaning towards the concrete knowledge side, as I said. He seems to have an ability to methodically look at things and arrive at conclusions that he laid out for us in his books. You'd really have to read his books to see what I'm talking about here. But he described patterns and logical correlations that led to this much bigger picture of viewing astrology of the soul. Two really good books of his, Esoteric Astrology and The Art of Synthesis, he looked at things, broke it down in all manner of characteristics of the signs and planets, and then correlated them to the esoteric and theosophical concepts. Mercury's also in Leo, the messenger, all of his books. Ray 4, Harmony Through Conflict, and it's in his 12th house of fears. And something that could be said for later, what happened in his life. In 1914, he was 54 at the time, he actually faced prosecution for fortune-telling through astrology. The case was dismissed for lack of evidence, but the scare led him to advise all of his fellow astrologers to give up that fatalistic prediction type stuff and seek more of a scientific approach. He hoped to legitimize astrology. And I want to tell you right now, living with in the astrology community, that's a hope that is still not a reality 100 years later. There is the strictly scientific side of the astrologers who are trying to legitimize it. There's the other intuitive and personalized soul-seeking side, and sometimes the two sides actually attack each other. But the thing is, there's actually still convictions of astrologers and laws on the books in several states against fortune telling via astrology. So we haven't come very far from in this 100 years in this regard, as much as we like to think we're a lot more enlightened society. Vulcan is also in Leo for him. We can ascertain that because we know where his sun is, and it's got to be within 8 degrees of that, 8.5 degrees. And Saturn, still in that 12th house, which he picked, karma and opportunity, and we see that working out for him. The destruction of the crystallized forms, something that he worked on with his astrological practices of the day. We also see the ray 3 of Saturn come through in his astrology. Then we mentioned that stellium in Aquarius. Leo is about learning to unite the mind and heart, to consciously express spiritual will, purpose, and intent. The Aquarian energy can be unconventional, impersonal, and rebellious. It was all of those for him. It was also awakening to group interests and individual responsibilities to that group life. And he showed us that in the work that he did. And this, it's in his 12th, in his 6th house of service. We see the strong emphasis for him to learn self-mastery that will lead him to that greater Aquarian expression. I really think this shows that he was a practical mystic and at the same time a capable idealist, moving, as Michael mentioned, you know, from the mystic to that occultist. Well, I think I've pointed out enough of who he was. You can read his bio on Wikipedia. You can get his books. And, of course, DK mentions them. So I'm going to open the floor up to any questions any of the students have on anything that we've discussed today, or questions for any of our guest presenters.
Yvonne has her hand up.
Go ahead, Yvonne.
I still don't understand that decadent chart, but that'll be posted and I can study it, right?
Sure, let's go back and look at it here really quickly.
But I do want to mention to everyone that's listening that we're not expecting or will we be moving into decanates for any more presentations. This is like a one-time deal so that when there's reference to it, you'll understand it. We don't want to complicate what we're doing. We're still basically working on the three luminaries and the few things that they touch in the chart, okay? This is a little bit advanced.
So the decanates, the rulers are all the exoteric rulers, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
You're looking at relationships within the chart, and that's what you see with the decanates. It takes the sign and it splits it up into thirds for you, and it gives you a more subtle look at that particular energy. And not only can you use the traditional rulers, which is what these are here, and for the most part, these are what DK gives us in the book when he tells us this one is more right or this one. DK does do a couple of advanced things, and other astrologers, when you really get to where you know the energies here, what you can do with this is you can replace them using the sign. Remember, it's the Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius, or for Leo, it's the Leo, Sagittarius, and Aries. You just kind of, you take the initial sign and then move to the next sign and to the next for the three of them. But you can actually look at the esoteric rulers. So the esoteric decanates for Aries would be Mercury, the Sun, and Earth, right? Yeah. Earth.
Yeah, he unfortunately he doesn't give it to us in that way. He gives us the esoteric for some of them, and they don't fall in line with the esoteric rulers.
So, right, right. He does mess with us there. He talks about some blinds and stuff. And this is one of the reasons that we didn't really plan on bringing this in, because there's so many different aspects to this. But it's just a way of looking at relationships, like Michael did within his chart, where he was able to take the exoteric ruler and show that the Sun was in... See, he was relating the ascendant at 0-1 to Mercury, the exoteric ruler, and Mercury is right here at 3 degrees, so it was semi-sextile. When he did it with the Sun, it's Venus, and it's the exoteric ruler, and it's semi-sextile too. So see, he was just saying it reinforces the emphasis of the esotericness that the Sun, the personality, is moving towards, but that it's the beginning degree for the ascendant, and he's got to take that Mercury and raise it up, and the two of them being conjunct. So it's just another way to look at it. Does that kind of give you a little more insight into it, Yvonne?
Yes, I'll just have to study it some to absorb it.
Okay. And don't do it by reading esoteric astrology and what DK says about him, because he goes into blinds and other things that will just be even more confusing. Please use the traditional rulers.
All right, where's the easiest place to look?
There isn't anything that's easy on this, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I basically have a vague, I have an overview or understanding of it, like what you said. I just have to look at it some more.
And you know what, and Yvonne, that's all we need, really. Unless you go into very advanced astrology, we really don't need to know the decanates all that well. It's more important to work with the way in which we've been emphasizing to do the charts. This is just an added piece. And there are still a very, very esoteric astrologers that are still debating on how to work with the esoteric rulers and all that kind of stuff. So it's still an unformed science, if you know what I mean. Next time around, when DK gives us more teachings, maybe he'll give us more clues as to how to handle that from an esoteric perspective.
Any other questions then before we... Did you have another question, Yvonne, or were you putting your hand?
No, I just wanted to thank you both.
Okay.
You're very welcome.
And the presenters.
Yeah, weren't they good?
Yes, they were.
Okay, and one more thing. Linda, I see you're here with us. We're asking the presenters to see if they have a second presentation that they would like to do. Maybe if you did a bio for somebody in the Great Quest course. And you'd like to present them in the format that we're using here. So if we haven't already done so, we'll come to you in an email and ask you if you've got somebody that you would like to present as a second person, kind of like I just did with Alan Leo. Okay? So if there's nothing else, then I'd like to say thank you all for attending. Thank you especially to our presenters. And I'll say goodbye to everybody.
Likewise. Thank you all.
Goodbye.